I'm here this evening chatting to Andy Anderson. I met Andy, funnily enough, in a church yesterday afternoon, and gave him my Beatles card, and he was interested enough to give me a call back, and he told me on the phone right then, and left it on the answering machine, a story which encouraged me to come and see him the next day. And the story suggested that he grew up in the same vicinity as the Beatles, and in fact had some contact with them back in the early days. So here I am sitting on his patio. It's a lovely Canadian summer evening, and I'm going to just encourage Andy to talk about some of those reminiscences. And perhaps if I start him off and ask him a question, what was it that you came to be in the area of the Cavern and Matthew Street at all? I mean, did you live in Liverpool?
No. My family were... I've got 8 siblings and myself, total of 9. Mum and Dad made it 11, doing simple math and getting it right for once. Our house was bombed. We had a, and still have, a family home in Scotland where the family emanate from, which is a place called Auchtimuchty. Its claim to fame is where they make Bell's whiskey. Very fine product, I might add. Good antifreeze for Canada. Anyway, my grandfather was the instigator of the Merseyside connection in that he was an accountant, put in a boarding school as an orphan from his parents' estate, his late parents' estate, and he went on and became very active in the produce business and the fruit exchange and the vegetable produce that was marketed by the brokers and the percentage men in the Victoria Street area of Liverpool. He was, as I say, an accountant. And Victoria Street is quite a famous street, quite close to the town hall in the city of Liverpool, and having had our house bombed, we went of necessity to live, and it was quite a new house, but be that as it may, we went into from the borders of Scotland. It was like standing on the Champlain Bridge in Ottawa with 1 foot in Quebec and 1 foot in Scotland. That's where we came from, and we located in Merseyside because of my grandfather's business there, and he was in the latter years of his working life. My father was an engineer with the local hydro outfit, as it turned out, and there was a strong family business in the furniture industry, which I didn't intend to, but was led into and forced into by my father, which was, when I use the adjective force, that was something he was very given to. You didn't ask, you were told. You didn't speak, you asked to speak. He was very Victorian. I was raised on Gilbert and Sullivan. I now know the world is much greater and bigger. I love classical music. I love the ballads of the Beatles, which weren't around when I heard them. Sometimes I deplore the so-called hard rock, which didn't exist from the Beatles and is erroneously wrapped around their name and attributed to them.
So when did you first become aware of the Beatles? And
when I heard Freddie Fell say they need a good manager and they'll go places, and they were in Liverpool, quite close to where I was working in 1953 and 54, and they were coming on odd occasions to the Cavern, which was an empty warehouse next door to where I worked, managed and run and rented out for fruit storage, Fife's Bananas to be specific, by this guy Freddie Fell, who was a man that I respected. He was snappy dresser, he wore cream coloured cord pants and a nice jacket and a cravat, no tie, with a panache and a little bit of pizzazz, the ladies man in the nicest sense of the word, about a barrel chested guy, about 5'9", very eloquent, and he had a good wit, and I used to enjoy his jokes, some of them a bit ribald, but I also possess and still do have lavatorial humour on my cuff. What else can I say?
I mean, did you recognise at that time that this band, the Beatles, had any staying power, or were they just one of lots and lots of other bands?
Everybody thought it was going to be a flash in the pan. It went on to greater things. There were all kinds of other people came along that, Cilla Black for one, was somebody that I admired. Ronnie Winchley was a fellow that I had known a little in my youth, and he came to be called, my memory's letting me down now, and it's in the tip of my tongue, and it's going to come to me, and I'll throw the name at you in a minute. He went on to sing the song called, very successfully, called Ferry Across the Mersey. The Ferry Across the Mersey, incidentally, was a boat called the Royal Irish. They used to have dances and what have you, social events.
Yeah, you're obviously talking about Jerry and the Pacemakers there,
Jerry,
right?
Marsden. Jerry,
yeah,
Marsden.
Jerry Marsden.
Yeah. Ronnie Winchley and his brother Mousie. Fat guy, yeah.
Mm. Now, you went to the cabin.
Oh, yeah, I worked next door to it.
Give us a feel of what it was like in the cabin during a concert.
Well, anybody knew you'd been in the cabin for a lunch hour gig, which was a new adjective to describe a booking, but gig was the word that was bounced around, and it went right over my head. Had a lot of hair then, by the way. If you'd been in the cabin, everybody knew it, because today's sweat, as I said to you earlier, is today's sweat, and it's called perspiration. And after that, it's got a stronger adjective to describe. It's called stink, which is the decomposition of the bacteria on the body, on the derma. When you go into the cabin, the walls used to run in rivulets of sweat, because the building was never convened for hundreds of people, shoulder to shoulder, all heavy breathing and applauding and clapping, and there was a raucous factor to it as well, and smoking heavily like you wouldn't believe. Everybody took licorice stick tar injections, mainlined it on cigarettes heavily, and everybody was of a similar age group. There were one or two older people there, but not many, but they were all around the late teenagers. I was probably a year or two older than the Beatles. John Lennon was probably the oldest. Yoko Ono hadn't even been thought of. She wasn't even on the scene in those days. They had a local Catholic priest as their manager. Another big influence in their life was a local businessman from a very well-to-do local family called Brian Epstein, a Jewish guy who owned the equivalent then to what might be called Sam the Music Man now. That was NEMS, and NEMS stood for North End Music Stores. Mm-hmm. And he went on to kill himself, sadly, later on. My sister worked for him, and before she worked for him, the building that he was located in, which was on the corner of Lord Street and Whitechapel, across from Paradise Street, this whole thing happened with the Beatles in an area that was already famous in history from sea shanty days of Blow the Man Down, Yo-Ho, Blow the Man Down, and they go on to sing when they were walking down Paradise Street. Way, hey, Blow the Man Down, you know the song?
Mm-hmm.
That's the same Paradise Street.
Yeah.
And where Lord Street and Church Street, Lord Street changed its name to Church Street, at the junction of Whitechapel and Paradise Street. Paradise Street is famous in history. I was thinking about this last night, running it through my brain, and the famous Maggie May, they have taken you away, and you never walk down Lime Street anymore. She was a famous whore of yesteryear. And Lime Street is a little bit further up. You've got London Road and Brunswick Road parallel to it, and the crossbar in the H is Lime Street. And if you made it to Lime Street, apparently, with the girls that sold themselves, that was the prime pad walking space. What else can I say? So this area is steeped in history, The cavern is just around the corner by about 3 minute walk to this town hall of Liverpool. Liverpool is known as Merseyside. The other side of the Mersey is a peninsula, and then you hit another river called the River Dee, which is tidal and goes right out. I've got a few relatives live over there in the Heswell and Thurstison area. I used to write poetry. My father deplored it. I was sitting very depressed, going through a hard time growing up, and I wrote some poetry watching the estuary fill with the tidal gully that used to roar in. And beyond that, the other side of it is North Wales, Flintshire. And I'm trying to remember what the words were, and I thought it's so good it should be printed, but it never was. Oh yeah, I watched the tide coming in. I was very depressed, manic you might say, and the sky went black, so I wrote, sky on high, dark and looming, sea below deep and brooding, swells the depth, slumbers ceasing, waves in anger join in meeting with the shores, unwelcome greeting. Crashing, rolling, roaring, surging to the beach's edges nearing. And I went on to write about a rainbow on God's peace, and I've forgotten that.
Your memory is astounding.
I'm an old fart now.
Yeah. Now, with such a memory, I want you to take us back to a concert with the Beatles performing at the cavern. You know, they're standing up there. Try and describe the scene. Try and describe how they handled it, what sort of
they used to jump a lot more. That they seemed to change their presentation as they became more sophisticated. When Ringo would be on his, he was the only one that kept a repetitious presentation. But they all jumped up and down on the spot. The rhythm was not rhythmic to the music always. And I've always had a sense, I'm not a musical person by training, but I have an ear. I've done 360 degrees, and as I said to you earlier, Finlandia by Sibelius is probably my favourite Warsaw concerto, and I could go on. And I love male voice choirs. When I was a rep in Wales, I was successful enough to get the whole of Wales as my territory. And I used to go to the Eisteddfod in a place called Llangollen. Llangollen, I think.
In those days, if I remember right, because I grew up in the same country, at least, as you did, you either loved the classical music or else you hated the classical
music,
and you liked the pop music. So
the Beatles used to play light finger music on the guitars, and I've no ability. I've always wanted to play a cornet. I don't know why, but it's always been something I'd like to do. I've always had the wind for it, perhaps. Maybe that's what's going to do with it. Never did. And yet all my family are artistically inclined, both in the musical and facet of art, and also in painting and sketching.
At that stage, did the audience scream? Because certainly in the days of Beatlemania,
they roared, but they didn't always scream. There was a euphoric high you always got. There's a crescendo at the end. But they had one or two pieces that were, and they don't even come to mind as such, because they changed totally. They did a big change, you know. The Beatles that you hear now, the ballads of the Beatles, the Eleanor Rigby bit, which I really go for. I'm really appreciative of the ballads more so than the rock. And they never were ever heavy, heavy rock. They were middle of the road. And what you've got now is a takeoff of it. It might say a bastardization of it.
Yeah. Now, you must have seen other bands as well as the Beatles. Do you remember any particular bands that you watched at that time?
No, there was later on, I used to follow a few things, and the army grabbed me when I was 18. I went to university and got asked to leave. I won't go into too much about that. I helped fly the dean of the faculty's wife's big fat wife's knickers up the mast of the church spire, and that was something you didn't do.
You're a real devil.
And well, when we fell off the roof, one guy did anyway. A few slates came, and they said we did thousands of dollars worth of irreparable damage, thousands of pounds, I should say, which was a lie because, you know, one man's body sliding down a roof. I came down in the gully with nail piercing to the rear end, and a few slates did come off, and they were Welsh slate, as is the mold in Britain.
Yeah.
And they made a stake into a whole hip of beef, you know. The army grabbed me, and I became a soldier.
Uh-huh.
And I was fortunate to... I did two tours of duty in Ireland, did 2 years in the army and 5 years with the colours. I did 7 years in all. Did two tours of duty in, as I said, in Ireland, and it wasn't... That was the start of the troubles when they were shooting back.
Yeah.
Learned to shoot round corners via a ricochet.
Wow.
Got a finger out of it.
Let's look then at your long association with this band that we're all fans of. You were there at the start. You're now still chatting about the Beatles. What's your opinion about their impact on society or the musical society? Do you think, how would you rate them?
On a 1 to 10, they're a 10 plus now. But in their formative years, they themselves, I'm quite confident, didn't realise for 1 minute how big they were going to be. There were many other artists around that were equally gifted, but nothing to the degree of accomplishment they were able to arrive at.
But in those days, nobody knew.
The biggest, they were in more shock than anybody else.
Mm.
They really were.
Yeah. Well, from their own words, I don't think that at that stage they expected to go on more than a couple of years.
I don't think they.
Yeah.
Well, they would be the first to admit it. I mean, they were uninhibited, and they would talk to anybody and anyone that would listen to them, because they wanted and craved recognition and the following. Mm. And I was part of the entourage, you might say, you know.
You were an early groupie.
I didn't realise it. I've been called that before. I'll turn it over before I reply in full. Quite a lot of fun.
Was the audience primarily boys or girls in those days?
Oh, there was a big preponderance of local girls from the business section who came in their lunch hour. Oh, it was nothing to see somebody getting dragged out by some pinstripe suit type who was obviously senior to her, not necessarily her dad. And I was in the same situation. My boss used to come and drag me out and used to complain about the stink of the sweat, because the smell really was something else.
So these were lunchtime concerts, and
oh, they were,
people
decidedly
were skipping their work and going to the concerts instead of working, so they had to get dragged back in again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't always get out of the door as well, because Matthew Street is the main service road to the warehouses that border the next street over. And all of the produce goes in the back door, so they jump the sidewalk, and the bollards were there to protect from the days when it was horse and cart, I suppose, and there were still one or two of them around, come to think of it. And Matthew Street runs down to Button Street and then swings right and enters Whitechapel, where NEMS is, on the corner of Church and Lord Street, opposite Paradise Street, shades of Brian Epstein's place. And the smell of the produce and the various fruits and the apples and the peaches and bananas, and it was a very, very, the senses of smell were very much exercised. And sometimes when you wanted to leave the cabin, you couldn't always get out, because there was a truck blocking the doorway, so much for fire. today you wouldn't get away with the way they pack the people in. The walls were about 3 feet thick. Still are. It's still there.
Yeah. You mentioned Ringo individually just now. I've always felt that one of the distinguishing things about the Beatles is that everybody knows the four members of the band, and they did in those days. Did you have, at that time, did you sort of, were you aware that there was John and Paul and so on, or were they just a bunch of four people?
They were just a bunch of four people. They hadn't made it individually as personalities. Ringo, because he was a demonstrative Woolworths counter type extrovert, looks like knuckle dusters all over his fingers. When he had a lot of rings on, he had a lot of rings on. And he had this huge nose. We used to debate whether it was Lebanese or Jewish. And when I say he had a nose, he made Schnoz Durant, the late Schnoz Durant, look like a small time.
You know, when he came to Montreal, there's this story that there was a suggestion that he was Jewish, and he was using the symbols in case he got shot. He was hiding behind them. That's documented. Because there was this... He wasn't, of course, Jewish, but this story had got out.
Just a careful Christian.
Yeah, because of his big nose. Because of his big nose. So, now, John and Paul, obviously the two prime creative members of the band, was it apparent then...
It was, very much so, yeah. And the other guys were subservient in attitude to them, two of them. And there seemed to be a little bit of rivalry between John and Paul, which abated later. There was also a thing about another kind of music, big on the scene then, was skiffle. Now, my claim to fame is I used to get a tea chest and a broom pole and put the broom pole through the tea chest, and I like to play a double bass. I've still got the finger movement pretty good, I think, considering, apart from a little damage to the tendon. But I could, you know, and I used to think I'd arrived. And there was we had a couple of guys on the spoons. One was my brother John Stewart, big fellow like my dad, 6'4" plus. And he was very gifted musically. He could play a harmonica like Larry Adler, and still can. And skiffle was competing with rock and roll, but they didn't know it. And of course, the sophistication of rock and roll, albeit it was new and in its infancy and raw and raucous, it was still sophisticated when you compare it with skiffle. And like a comb and paper and two spoons and a double bass, me on a double bass, lots of other skiffle groups that were trying to make it had the same abilities. And by which time we'd arrived at round about 1956-7, and this big program that hit the TV waves was called 6-5 Special. The time Bill Haley came over and fell flat in his face with the Comets. The people that were around at that time in what we call folk music were people like Long John Baldry and Nancy Whiskey. There are other names, and I'm going to get them later, but I can't hear them all now. I can see faces.
Did you ever see the Beatles before Ringo joined them? Did you see them when Pete Best was in the band?
No. I know the story about Pete Best. Boy, what a story, though, eh?
Yeah.
If you're looking at dollars and cents, what a story.
Yeah. He is a fan of Ottawa. He's been here at least three times, to my knowledge, and... he seems to come back and with his band, which is a lot of fun.
He's not going to starve, is he?
Fun?
He's not going to starve. He's going to make a good living.
I don't think he'll starve because some of his drumming is on the anthology album, so he's getting a revenue stream from that. Well, I think it's just been a delight for you to take us back here to what it was like, and you've captured the feeling. And I know it's authentic because I was around at that time. I didn't live in Liverpool.
Where were you?
And I was in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And
so was I.
My ship came into Liverpool in 65.
Wow.
And I went and looked at the cavern.
No pun intended, but you'd missed the boat.
Right. I was late. But I did actually... I remember going and looking at the cavern. And I remember also on that same trip buying Help, the album, and just being blown away. In those days, you bought every Beatles album the day it came out.
Yeah, there's a new shop opened at the bottom of Matthew Street, where the opposite end on the right-hand side, when you're travelling down Matthew Street off North John Street, runs parallel to Victoria Street. And at the bottom end, just where Matthew Street changes its name to Button Street, there's a shop there that sells memorabilia. And it sort of doesn't do as good a job as it should do or could do, as far as I'm concerned. They could do an awful lot more.
Yeah.
But the heritage the Beatles has left us, maybe it's my age speaking and my appreciative ear for ballad, but Eleanor Rigby, there's nothing to touch it. And Penny Lane, my sister Irene, her son's getting married. She called me 2 weeks ago. She was a bit smitten with melancholia and lubricated by bells, I suspect. But they'd all gone to see Manchester United play, and there was another game on that they wanted to watch, which was Newcastle. Now, my son-in-law goes into a depression if Newcastle lose, which is quite frequent, I might add. He literally is in tears. My daughter will tell you she doesn't know what the hell to do with the man, and they're all like that in Geordieland. But they seem to... they always get hammered by Liverpool as a team. I was a rugby player, but I had a sharp interest in soccer as well. And, my claim to fame was I played for Pilkington Glass B team. I was never any good as a sports player, but I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the rough and tumble of it all.
Andy, I just want to thank you so much for your reminiscences. It's been a joy to chat with you tonight. Thank you so much, Andy Anderson.
You're welcome.